From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. We're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C.
I believe in an America that is officially neither Catholic, Protestant, nor Jewish, where no public official either requests or accepts instructions on public policy from the Pope, the National Council of Churches, or any other ecclesiastical source.
That's Senator John F. Kennedy speaking as a presidential candidate in 1960. Present at the writing of those words and many others was his friend, advisor, and speechwriter Ted Sorensen. Mr. Sorensen passed away last week, and we'll remember him with an excerpt from a State of Belief radio interview during the 2008 elections.
As our next governor, you can grab this handle and bring the people with you to Albany. Or you can leave it untouched and run the risk of having it wielded against you.
I just got off the phone with my opponent, and I asked him if he would talk to you and if he would take up my promise.
Well, that's new and far different from Ted Sorensen. Losing Tea Party candidates Carl Paladino of New York and Christine O'Donnell of Delaware explaining in their concession speeches Tuesday night how by not electing them, voters were showing support for their policies. We'll explore these possibly delusional convictions and then possible implications of this election with two of our favorite guests, Greg LaBelle and Sarah Posner.
This was not a rally to ridicule people of faith or people of activism, or to look down our noses at the heartland, or passionate argument, or to suggest that times are not difficult and that we have nothing to fear. They are, and we do. But we live now in hard times, not end times.
Thanks, John. I needed that. There's something immensely ironic in hearing such words, not from a great religious leader, not from a gifted politician, but from Comedy Central host Jon Stewart, speaking last weekend at the rally to restore sanity and or fear on the Mall in Washington, D.C. Wouldn't it be wonderful if that view of our society even occasionally entered both our public and private discourse? We'll listen to more of Stewart's speech later in the show. When John F. Kennedy ran for the White House in 1960, one of the claims made by the young senator's opponents was that Kennedy would take his orders from Rome. This religion-based fear-mongering was heard from many pulpits, and the general atmosphere of intolerance has many unpleasant parallels today. What Kennedy had going for him were his own powerful communication skills and a brilliant friend and speechwriter, Ted Sorensen. In pledging his unwavering commitment to the separation of church and state, JFK managed to gain enough trust and support to win the presidency. As the topic of religion encroached on the 2008 elections, we were fortunate to have Ted Sorensen appear on State of Belief Radio. In fact, it was one of my favorite interviews ever. Sorensen passed away last week at the age of 82, and I'd like to salute his legacy by playing an excerpt of that conversation.
I want to talk about the speech that President Kennedy gave in which he addressed his Catholicism. His words in Houston would be a good pledge for any president to make. To promise.
Unfortunately, no other president has made them, but it was about his strong support of the separation of church and state. Because as a Catholic, Kennedy was suspect, indeed assailed, that he would yield to the Catholic hierarchy and that they, the members of the Catholic hierarchy, be permitted to dictate public policy, indeed presidential policy, on matters of importance to the Church.
Ted, the current environment is one in which candidates and politicians often feel compelled to include religious references in their rhetoric and to wear religion on their sleeve, so to speak.
And in the debates this year, when the broadcasters would ask all kinds of personal religious questions to the candidates, I shouted to my television set, "That's none of your business."
I was doing exactly the same thing. And I want you, if you will, to say, what is the proper role of religion in the public life of a government leader?
I have no objection whatsoever to a public leader worshiping his God in his own way in private. And I haven't the slightest objection to his drawing moral and ethical principles from his religious upbringing, but I do not believe that he should impose his religion on anyone else. He should not, against the Constitution, impose a religious test for those whom he appoints. In short, religion and the state have flourished in this country in part because they leave each other alone, and that's the way it should remain.
Tell our listeners, if you will, what is so bad about turning religion into a political strategy and seeking to get the state to do the work of the Church?
The government represents all the people in the country, regardless of their individual religious faiths. Taxpayers' money come from all citizens, regardless of their religious faith. So it is an outrage, indeed unconstitutional, for any public official, especially the president, to favor one religion over another, or indeed to favor religion over non-religion.
Mm. Would you mind telling our listeners how you personally define religious liberty?
Religious liberty in this country, and this was very important to our founding fathers, the drafters of the Constitution, because they were people who fled a state system of a state religion in which the king was the head of the Church as well as the head of the country. And in this country, everyone is free to worship the God of his beliefs and attend the Church or not attend the Church of his own belief and decision.
The late Ted Sorensen speaking with us in 2008. Sorensen was a friend of and speechwriter for President John F. Kennedy. Sorensen passed away last week at age 82. We'll miss him. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio.
Everyone is voting for Jack, 'cause he's got what all the rest lack. Everyone wants to back Jack. Jack is on the right track.
Welcome back, everybody, to State of Belief. I'm Welton Gaddy. Well, the midterm elections are over, and the overall result is pretty much in keeping with expert predictions. After so much discussion in anticipation of the vote, it would be easy to focus on other topics this week, but the future will be impacted by these election results, and not just by the victories. In fact, listen to what two losing Tea Party candidates had to say in their speeches, which were supposed to be concession speeches.
I have a message for Andrew Cuomo, the next governor of New York. I've always said my baseball bat is a metaphor for the people who want to take their government back. But this isn't my bat after all. As our next governor, you can grab this handle and bring the people with you to Albany. Or you can leave it untouched and run the risk of having it wielded against you. Because make no mistake, you have not heard the last of Carl Paladino.
The Delaware political system will never be the same. I just got off the phone with my opponent, and I asked him if he would talk to you, and if he would take up my promise to, in this lame duck session, fight to stop the death tax from being reinstated. We can only hope and pray that he chooses to go against his party leadership.
New York gubernatorial candidate Carl Paladino and Delaware's Christine O'Donnell interpreting their respective losses as an endorsement of their campaign messages. I suppose after such an unusual election year, it's only natural to hear unusual concession speeches, but it certainly underscores the fact that the Tea Party is not going anywhere, win or lose. Two people have been very generous with their time and expertise leading up to Election Day. You all already know who I'm going to introduce. Greg LaBelle is Assistant Professor of Political Management and Director of the Semester in Washington program at the George Washington University. He's a veteran of several presidential campaigns, and he joins us now in studio along with, you got it, Sarah Posner, Associate Editor of Religion Dispatches, where she covers politics for the site. Sarah is the author of God's Prophets, P-R-O-F-I-T-S, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters. Her work has appeared in a number of respected publications, and I'm delighted to have Greg and Sarah here today. Welcome, both of you.
It's good to be here.
Thanks, Walton.
What's this with losing candidates using their concession speeches to warn their winning opponents to follow the will of the voters? Am I wrong? I thought voters expressed their will by voting. What's going on?
I think that insurgent candidates often do sort of express a certain moral victory in their concession speeches. You know, we've moved the process. We've changed the way politics is going to be from now on and that kind of thing. That's not all that unusual. I think what's unusual was the tenor of these two speeches. And in fairness, you picked out two of the oddest of the candidates.
Don't forget the baseball bat.
Well, that's true. You can't forget the baseball bat. I mean, I think it was a matter of degree that really made these two speeches so strange.
I think that for Christine O'Donnell in particular, I think the fact that she was running at all was a victory in her mind, right? I mean, it was sort of an accident, you might say, that she was even the Republican nominee. She has run a Senate campaign now, and perhaps she sees that as a necessary inroad for a future campaign or a pundit spot on Fox or just a good book deal. I mean, in the sort of political celebrity culture that we have right now, she looks at Sarah Palin as her model.
A lot of pundits insist on saying that this vote was a referendum on President Obama's agenda. Now, an exception was Rachel Maddow, who was particularly clear on how often a midterm election sees a president lose Congress. She even had a chart. But I'm interested in what the two of you think. Where does the truth lie on this? The president clearly thinks it's as much a failed communication policy as anything else. What is it?
While it's true that the president's party often loses in the midterms, I think that what you saw in this particular midterm was a somewhat stunning reversal from the thrill of Obama that so many people experienced in 2008 to now. And people are attributing that to many different things. You can attribute it to the Tea Party's demonization and the successes of that demonization. And you can also attribute it to what Marshall Ganz wrote in the LA Times about Obama changing from being a transformative president to being a transactional president. He lost that sort of emotional tug and talked more about policy points than hope or change.
Mm-hmm. How do you say it, Greg?
Well, I think Sarah's right. And I would add just a couple of thoughts. It does, in many ways, come back to the economy. It's very difficult when people are so scared about losing jobs, losing homes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to sort of rise above that in any way, shape, or form. I don't think the president or the administration can take any comfort in what happened or explain it away. And the other factor, you have this the problem with who turns out to vote. And it tends to be younger people, and it tends to be minorities who don't tend to vote in midterms. And this is always the case. Mm-hmm. And as hard as the Democratic Party tried to bring out these voters, they simply didn't succeed.
I guess on a percentage scale, we've heard maybe less about religion in this campaign than we heard certainly in the presidential campaign. But conservative religious groups are claiming a huge victory in the culture wars. There's a preliminary study out from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life that shows the highest ever support for Republicans from evangelical Christians, Catholics, and other Protestant voters, and a drop in the percentage of unaffiliated voters supporting Democrats. In fact, one conservative news site has coined the phrase T-evangelicals. Is that a bit premature?
I think it is. I think that one of the big challenges that conservatives in this country face right now is how to bring those two pieces of conservatism together. The Tea Party movement, which is based on a sort of economic, constitutionally, and I say that with some creepiness, approach to government, and the religious right. And I think that's an uncomfortable combination at best. I'd be interested in what Sarah thinks about that.
Well, the piece I wrote as the election returns were coming in was titled "The Tea Party Illusion." And the argument that I made there was that the Tea Party is not really anything new. It's the Republican Party. Maybe the Republican Party amped up on steroids a little more. And the percentage of evangelicals, there's a strong evangelical support for the Tea Party movement. So I think that if you look at the polling data with respect to evangelicals, it's really not a lot different than how evangelicals have voted in previous elections. Evangelicals and what I called in the piece theo-free marketeers, theo-capitalists, you know, a lot of big business types who also come together on these religious issues with the Tea Party. It's not an uncomfortable alliance for them. And these are alliances that the Republican Party has been building for a long time.
I'm speaking with Sarah Posner of Religion Dispatches and Greg LaBelle from George Washington University. We'll talk some more right after this break. This is State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back, friends. This is State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. In the studio with us are Greg LaBelle of George Washington University and Sarah Posner from Religion Dispatches. We continue our conversation.
The fact is, both of you are experts in political analysis, one from the perspective of a journalist, one from the perspective of a political consultant. I'm interested, each from your unique perspective, what is most important to be learned from this election as a journalist?
I think that the media in general overplayed the Tea Party. I still think, and this isn't because I cover the religious right, I think the polling data and the numbers bear this out, the religious right is still more of a political force in our country than the Tea Party is. And the fact that many of them are aligning themselves with the Tea Party is a very important combination that people should be paying attention to, and paying attention to how the religion plays with the economic issues of the Tea Party, how the idea that the Constitution is divinely ordained or derived from the Bible is a very important factor when Tea Partiers talk about that they want to go back to constitutional originalism. So I think if anything, what I'd want to see journalists and reporters and pundits take away from this is that these are not two separate movements. These are movements that are very deeply, philosophically, and strategically, and functionally intertwined with each other.
From a political organizing perspective, I think in a lot of ways, what we've seen reinforces what we have known about the way American politics works, about the yin and yang of politics, midterms versus presidential election years. These are not surprises. As Sarah said, I think that one of the things that may, in some ways it was more dramatic this year, but it wasn't out of character with midterm elections. And I think what you just said is why. I think the media and the media continues to be more and more central in how citizens view this, that the media sort of played the Tea Party phenomenon way beyond probably what it was entitled to, which made this worse. And again, I think we have to acknowledge, too, that the president and the White House political staff might not have seen this coming early enough. I think that they stumbled early and were never able to recover.
I wonder if some of these people who are losing their offices now realize that it is not productive to try to be somebody you're not in order to stay in office. It would be much better to lose knowing that you had lost with your own integrity and not trying. I mean, somebody must have thought somewhere back 6 months, 10 months ago, say, well, yeah, we really ought to do that. That's one of my priorities. But let's don't do that because I want to get reelected. Well, it didn't work. Am I being too hard at that point or not?
No.
No?
I don't think you are either. I think that's one of the challenges that that many in Congress face. Now, I have a longstanding belief that given enough time, voters see through this falseness and take it into account. And I've seen it a number of times in elections.
Yeah. Ted Sorensen died this past week, worked closely with President Kennedy. Today's show features a segment that he did with us as a memorial. Would President Obama benefit from a Ted Sorensen today?
In terms of his developing his message, I think now we'd have to say yes. I think 2 years ago or a year and a half ago, whatever, we would have said no, absolutely, this guy's got it down. But it certainly seems that way since the inauguration. I mean, the president does not seem to have been on his game in terms of message.
Who was that man on my television yesterday afternoon? That was not Barack Obama. Who stole Barack Obama and gave us that tired, defeated man that was on TV? I think that not only has he lost the rhetoric, he's lost the he almost seemed yesterday, at least, that he had lost the fire in the belly, too.
Mm. I want to just real quickly go back to the issue of the blue dogs and so on and so forth, because I think there's another sort of hardcore piece of this, too. And I think we have to recognize that one of the reasons we ended up with a lot of these folks in these seats was that in 2006 and 2008, there was a real effort to recruit Democrats who didn't fit neatly into the Democratic philosophy. Now, I'm not saying that all Democrats should be walk in lockstep. Certainly not that. But there were some people who were really on the edges. And you add to that the fact that a lot of Democrats won in 2008 on Obama's coattails who never, ever would have won otherwise, that were really up against the wall in this election. And you could almost assume that they were going to go down. And a lot of them did. But I think that combination really added to this to this result that we saw this week.
What are you going to look for as the first signs of whether or not there is any way forward with cooperation
between the two? Well, we may have seen it today in that the president has invited the leadership to sit down.
Okay, it's not today, so because we're not going to be
right,
on
sorry,
today.
I'm
so
sorry.
We may have seen it.
Yeah, we may have seen it a little bit earlier, and the president came out, I think, a day or two after the election and said it's time to sit down and talk. We have to watch the rhetoric and see just how heated that remains. I think that these guys all understand the importance of rhetoric and how they talk about this. And I think we'll begin to pick up clues as to just how serious folks are. And we'll begin to understand how it fits into their own personal and party agendas, because that's really what it's going to be about.
I don't think that the Republicans, and I think they know this, I don't think they have anything political to gain by cooperating with Obama. They think. in terms of like mobilizing their own base, which is so anti-Obama. Now, the question is, will they turn off those independents that swung their way by not cooperating with Obama? And that's the kind of box that they've put themselves in. Their base expects them to be anti anything that Obama or the Democratic Senate proposes to do. But I think that they run that risk of going too far down that obstructionist road.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that you look at some of these new members on the Republican side, and this is going to make herding cats look really easy.
From the perspective of the Interfaith Alliance, we obviously are interested in what the future of church-state separation, religious liberty looks like. I suppose we should be heartened that O'Donnell and Engel didn't get elected. They were out front on that issue. But that's not any indication that that battle's won, is it?
No, it's a political. I think it's a political calculation that these guys are going to have to do, and I don't think that's by any means settled. I think that you mentioned earlier on the religious right, sort of the leaders of the religious right, and announcing that this was a big win for us. Mm-hmm. Whenever the party you affiliate yourself most closely with wins, everybody stands up and said, this was a big win for us. I'm not so sure. I don't think that's been we've determined that yet. I think that there are some battles ahead for what the agenda of the Republican Party is going to be. And again, we are now in presidential election season. That happened Wednesday morning.
I think we actually are looking at a much hardcore anti-separation of church and state caucus in both houses. Obviously, within the House, with the Republicans having the majority now, and with people like Michelle Bachmann, Mike Pence is stepping down from his leadership position, but Michelle Bachmann is angling to take his place, and she's very opposed to church state. I mean, she is, she is a theocrat. And then on the Senate side, you have Jim DeMint angling for a much bigger role, possibly trying to push McConnell out of the way with the help of McConnell's fellow Kentuckian Rand Paul. And so I think that the Democrats are looking at a much slimmer majority in the Senate, much, much slimmer. And that even though Engel and O'Donnell didn't win, you have several people who are much more hardcore than generally the Republican Party is.
My guests have been Sarah Posner, Associate Editor at Religion Dispatches, author of God's Prophets, Faith, Fraud, and the Republican Crusade for Values Voters, and Greg LaBelle, Assistant Professor of Political Management and Director of the Semester in Washington Program at the George Washington University. These folks will be back. Look, we're into the presidential campaign now, and the stakes get even higher. But thanks to both of you for giving us good insights into what's been going on the last several months and what went on Election Day.
Thank you, Welton.
Thanks, Welton. It's fun.
Still to come on this week's show, some serious words about this nation and its people from a popular comedian. Words worth hearing after all the rancor and contentiousness of this election season. Stay tuned. We're coming right back. This is State of Belief Radio. Welcome back to State of Belief, everybody. I'm Welton Gaddy. How refreshing it is to find encouragement, inspiration, and even wisdom in a place and in a moment where there's no reason to expect any extraordinary insight. Such was the surprise and satisfaction that came from listening to John Stewart address 200,000 people who gathered in Washington last weekend as a part of the rally to restore sanity and or fear. The event was variously seen as a parody of the recent Glenn Beck rally on the Mall or a marketing campaign for the Comedy Central television channel. But from John Stewart's first words at the gathering's conclusion, it was obvious that his speech was something special.
This was not a rally to ridicule people of faith or people of activism or to look down our noses at the heartland or passionate argument or to suggest that times are not difficult and that we have nothing to fear. They are and we do. But we live now in hard times, not end times. And we can have animus and not be enemies. But unfortunately, one of our main tools in delineating the two broke. The country's 24-hour Politico pundit perpetual panic conflictinator did not cause our problems, but its existence makes solving them that much harder. The press can hold its magnifying glass up to our problems, bringing them into focus, illuminating issues heretofore unseen. Or they can use that magnifying glass to light ants on fire. And then perhaps host a week of shows on the sudden, unexpected, dangerous flaming ant epidemic. If we amplify everything, we hear nothing.
To the astonishment of many, John Stewart refused to jump on the bandwagon of division. In an articulate dismissal of panicked rhetoric about a divided nation, Stewart reminded us that we work together every day. Anticipating feelings following a hotly contested election, Stewart reminded us that there is more to our lives than politics.
We work together to get things done every damn day. The only place we don't is here or on cable TV. But Americans don't live here or on cable TV. Where we live, our values and principles form the foundation that sustains us while we get things done, not the barriers that prevent us from getting things done. Most Americans don't live their lives solely as Democrats, Republicans, liberals, or conservatives.
Those are powerful words. And by the way, I'm certain John Stewart is not saying that every cable television show is destroying America. After all, he hosts one himself. But it is a sad fact that in the desperate quest for ratings and revenue, creating a constant crisis atmosphere is sadly the easiest way to ensure a sizable audience. That's one of the reasons we here at State of Belief Radio are so grateful to the broadcasters who choose to air this program every week. Before concluding his remarks, John Stewart showed a film clip of a mass of cars entering the Lincoln Tunnel that runs between New Jersey and New York City. The film shows exactly the situation that strikes me as unresolvable every time I'm in a cab trying to enter that tunnel. But Stewart was right about what happens and why.
These cars, that's a school teacher probably thinks his taxes are too high. He's going to work. There's another car. A woman with two small kids can't really think about anything else right now. There's another car swinging. I don't even know if you can see it. A lady's in the NRA and loves Oprah. There's another car. An investment banker, gay, also likes Oprah. Another car is a Latino carpenter. Another car, a fundamentalist vacuum salesman. Atheist obstetrician. Mormon Jay-Z fan. But this is us. Every one of the cars that you see is filled with individuals of strong belief and principles they hold dear. Often principles and beliefs in direct opposition to their fellow travelers. And yet these millions of cars must somehow find a way to squeeze one by one into a mile-long, 30-foot-wide tunnel carved underneath a mighty river. Carved by people, by the way, who I'm sure had their differences. And they do it. Concession by concession. You go, then I'll go. You go, then I'll go. You go, then I'll go. Oh, my God, is that an NRA sticker on your car? Is that an Obama sticker on your car? Oh, that's okay. You go, and then I'll go. And sure, at some point, there will be a selfish jerk who zips up the shoulder and cuts in at the last minute. But that individual is rare, and he is scorned and not hired as an analyst.
Yes. Yes, the man makes us laugh, but the same man points us toward a glimpse of light. At the end of an emotions-tugging week that brought elation to some and depression to others, John Stewart gave all of us words to live by, wisdom with which not only to live, but to live better. There is a way to work together. We isolate the selfish jerks and then, taking turns, getting on the road, narrow though it is, you go and then I'll go. We walk or run together and get to know each other as we all discover that this is the road, the only road, that leads to light and cooperation, that strengthens democracy, and assures a place for everybody within it. My goodness, our time is up for today. But visit us online at stateofbelief.com. You can do that anytime. You'll find out more about the show, listen to show archives, and sign up for our podcasts. That's stateofbelief.com. And let me tell you again, we need you to remind a friend about this show. Tell them about it for the first time. Offer to listen to it together. Encourage them to become listeners. After such a long and bitter election season, many of us will be tempted to abstain from politics altogether. I've had enough of that stuff, we say. We'll just let them all go. But this is going to be the time that relationships are forged, decisions made, and the future of our nation decided. Not with one burst of fireworks on November 2nd, but day by day, decision by decision, one by one, conversation by conversation. So look, I encourage you to stay engaged, stay committed to your convictions, believe in the great promise of our democracy. State of Belief Radio is the production of Interfaith Alliance. There's not been a time in recent history where the cause of religious liberty needed more support than now. Join us today. Become a member. Go to interfaithalliance.org to learn more. And we'll be right back here on State of Belief Radio next week with more stories from the intersection of religion and politics. But until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief. The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was.